If you're looking to build long-term wealth through property, you always hit that same wall, right? That big unknown. The fundamental question is just, how much can I actually borrow for an investment property?
It's the absolute starting line for any investor, and our sources make one thing crystal clear. That answer is, well, it's highly individual.
It's not a fixed menu price.
Not at all. Your loan limit isn't something you just look up. It's a dynamic outcome, and it's determined by your complete financial footprint. Lenders are doing this intense risk assessment, trying to pinpoint the maximum amount you can comfortably repay, even if the market, turns sour.
And this is where the distinction is so vital. Borrowing for an investment property is a whole different ballgame from getting a mortgage on the house you live in.
Oh, completely.
When a bank looks at an investment asset, they just automatically see higher risk.
Well, that perceived risk, it comes down to volatility. The rental income you're relying on to pay the debt, it can be capricious, it can fluctuate wildly, or even disappear entirely for a few months.
Right, during vacancy periods.
Exactly. And property values can shift rapidly, too. Because of all that instability, lenders impose much stricter stress tests, and they set more conservative limits than they would for a standard home loan. They have to assume you can handle the payments no matter what.
So our mission today is to cut through that complexity. This deep dive pulls from a comprehensive guide that really maps out borrowing limits, repayment criteria, and crucially, the risks of over-leveraging.
And we'll also look at some smart debt-free alternatives for getting into the market.
Great. So where do we start?
We begin with the core of the lender's focus: affordability. Forget the glossy property brochures for a minute. The number one metric is what they call your borrowing capacity.
So your proven ability to actually sustain those monthly repayments.
Yes, and the capacity has to hold up even if you face slower rental periods or, and this is the big one, if interest rates spike.
The material we looked at had a really great contrast that highlights what stability looks like to a bank.
It does.
So picture a borrower with a steady long-term salary, maybe minimal revolving debt, and an impeccable credit score.
Right.
The bank sees rock-solid stability.
And that leads directly to a higher loan potential. Now let's flip that script. Imagine another borrower. They've got existing car loans, high credit card balances, and their expenses already eat up a huge chunk of their monthly income.
Okay.
If that person applies when interest rates are also rising, well, their actual borrowing capacity just shrinks dramatically. Their ability to repay is minimized before they even walk in the door.
Stability isn't just a nice to have then. It's the gateway to the capital itself.
It is.
And that brings us right to the factors. Banks use a specific a seven-part framework to basically quantify your risk profile. So let's unpack these checks that either boost your borrowing power or bring it crashing down.
What's really fascinating here is how interlinked they all are. They aren't just looking at the numbers in isolation, but the consistency and the resilience behind them.
Okay, so factor one, income stability. Seems obvious, but what specifically are they looking for beyond just the annual salary?
They're looking for endurance. Lenders scrutinize the source. Is it salary, hourly wages, business income? And they evaluate the contract length.
So a long-term job is a big plus.
A huge plus. Consistent long-term employment, 2 years or more, that's documented evidence of reliability. That supports a higher loan. Irregular income, short-term contracts. That's immediately viewed as intermittent, and it's going to lower your potential.
Got it. Next up is monthly expenses. This is the one that always feels a bit intrusive, right? It's everything from bills and dependents to that gym membership you barely use.
It feels intrusive because it is arguably the most honest reflection of your capacity. High monthly living costs directly reduce the free income available for your loan
The
repayment.
less you spend, the more you can borrow.
In a nutshell, yes. Lenders are just calculating the gap between what comes in and what has to go out.
Factor three, your credit score and history. This is where your past financial behavior really dictates your future.
A strong history isn't just about paying on time. It signals low risk and financial discipline. A prime credit score can unlock the best interest rates and, critically, support a much higher overall loan.
And on the flip side,
Missed payments, defaults, high credit utilization, those are immediate red flags. They'll cause lenders to severely limit the loan or just deny the application outright.
which leads us right to existing debt. Car loans, student debt, credit cards,
Yeah.
it all gets stacked up against you.
Absolutely. Think of it this way. Every dollar that's currently servicing old debt is a dollar that cannot service this new property loan. The immediate impact is a sharp reduction in your borrowing power.
And that impact is all quantified by maybe the most critical measurement of all, the debt-to-income ratio, or DTI. How important is this one?
This is the loan's maximum choke point. The DTI just calculates the percentage of your gross income that's already dedicated to servicing all of your debt.
So what's a bad number? What's a red flag?
Well, it varies a bit by bank and market, but generally anything approaching or exceeding 43% is often seen as a significant hurdle. It'll likely force the lender to offer a much smaller loan. A low DTI shows you have a healthy financial margin.
Okay, factor six is one that's largely out of our control. The interest rate environment.
Yeah, the market rates are a massive variable. Lower rates mean smaller repayments, which mechanically increases your borrowing capacity.
But if rates are high, or they're predicted to rise,
then the lender has to calculate higher future repayments, which immediately lowers the approved loan size they're willing to offer you today.
And finally, the investment itself. Property type. Not all doors look the same to the bank.
That's right. They're judging the risk of the asset itself. A stable property in a high-demand area. That's seen as safer. But if you're looking at off-plane units or volatile regional markets or something that relies on the short-term rental market,
which banks see as higher risk?
Inherently higher risk. Yeah. And that can push your borrowing limits down or, you know, just increase the deposit they require.
That covers the assessment. So now let's talk mechanics and risk. Do investors usually need a significantly higher deposit?
Generally, yes. It all comes back to that risk profile. Lenders routinely require a larger deposit for investment properties. This larger contribution just reduces the bank's exposure if the property value drops.
And that brings us to the loan-to-value ratio, the LTV. We hear this term all the time. How does a borrower use their LTV to their advantage?
The LTV is just the ratio of the loan size to the property's value. So if a property is worth $1 million and you borrow $700,000, your LTV is 70%.
Simple enough.
A larger deposit lowers that LTV, which is a powerful signal to the lender that you're less of a risk. That usually means better interest rates, more favorable terms, and a higher chance of approval.
Okay, so when we talk about maximizing how much you can borrow, we need to pivot the focus a little. The real question should probably be, how much can I repay without creating financial distress?
Exactly. Overleveraging is a genuine hazard. It's what happens when your monthly repayments consume way too much of your net income, making you really vulnerable to shocks.
Shocks like losing a tenant.
Or falling rental income, unexpected and costly maintenance, a dip in property value. The key is how interconnected these risks are, especially when interest rates are volatile.
So if rates rise even a little bit and you lose a tenant for 2 months,
the combined financial pressure can become catastrophic.
So you're suggesting every borrower needs to build in a margin of safety, like a buffer for a rate hike, no matter what the bank approves.
Absolutely. This is the single most vital piece of advice. We highly recommend running a stress test. Go to a mortgage calculator and intentionally increase the interest rate by 2 or 3 percentage points above whatever the current market rate is.
And see if you can still afford it.
If the loan is still comfortably affordable in that scenario, you have a sufficient margin. If it's not, you're already overborrowed from day one. And you should always maintain an emergency fund just to cover maintenance and bridge those slow rent months.
That really shifts the conversation. It's not just about getting the loan, it's about securing the investment itself. But what about listeners who are eager to get into real estate, but all this talk of debt, it's just not for them?
For those people, borrowing is indeed optional. Our sources highlighted some excellent alternatives that bypass the need for a mortgage entirely.
Like what?
Things like real estate investment funds, tokenized property platforms, or fractional asset ownership.
And these fractional asset platforms, they offer some pretty compelling advantages, especially for new investors.
They do. The major benefit is accessing asset wealth without the prerequisites. No mortgage, no massive deposit, no complex months-long bank approval process we just went through.
So instead of being tied to one property and years of debt,
you can buy fractional shares with incredibly minimal entry amounts, sometimes the equivalent of just a few hundred US dollars.
That flexibility lets you diversify across multiple properties or sectors almost immediately. And you get the real estate exposure without the huge financial pressure of debt or the headaches of maintenance. It's a lower pressure path to building a portfolio.
So to synthesize today's deep dive, responsible borrowing really hinges on understanding exactly how your personal factors, your income stability, your debt load, your credit history, how all that interacts with the property's risk and the current interest rate environment to set your final loan limit.
The focus should always be on building long-term, resilient wealth, not just getting the biggest loan possible.
Right. And if the whole idea of conventional loans and the intense scrutiny of your DTI, if that truly makes your blood run cold, Remember that the landscape of asset ownership is evolving.
These low-entry alternatives provide a flexible pathway to grow a real estate portfolio while actively mitigating the huge financial and psychological risk of debt.
Which, you know, raises an important question for you to consider. If traditional borrowing requires this intense personal scrutiny of your debt and your stability, what does the growing popularity of these low-entry fractional investment options, what does that imply about the future accessibility of asset wealth for the average person?
Something to ponder as you plan your next step into the world of property investment. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.